Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by The Isley Brothers, The Carpenters, The Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and I live in Wichita, Kansas. I am a Patreon supporter for Creative Control. I discovered Creative Control some years ago, I think maybe while looking for interviews with Tommy Stinson of The Replacements. And I stumbled across this conversation that Vish had with Tommy Stinson that was really insightful. Vish held his own. I think Tommy can be a little bit of a difficult interview at times. And it went really well, and it really got into some areas that I wasn't expecting. And I thought, gosh, I have to listen to more of this guy and his podcast. Yeah, sometimes I'm not necessarily a fan of the music or musicians that Vish will have on the show, but I always appreciate their creative process a little bit more. And more times than not, though, it does lead me to finding a new musical artist that I'm interested in, or to think a little bit differently about maybe some artists whose work I've overlooked. So, you know, go ahead, and if you've been waiting at all to support Vish and Creative Control, now is probably the best time to do it. I know as a public radio employee here in Kansas, listener-supported broadcasting, whether it's podcasts or radio itself, really isn't a thing of the past. It's actually very much a thing of both the present and the future. So, yay Vish, yay Creative Control.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Jeremy Gaudette and Brian Murphy are multi-talented songwriters and musicians currently based in Toronto, Ontario. Originally from Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, Gaudette and Murphy are part of the wondrous four-piece rock band Kiwi Junior, whose excellent third album is called Chopper, and was released on August 12, 2022, by Sub Pop Records. To celebrate this fact and maintain the tradition of Kiwi Jr. being on Creative Control every time they release a new album, Jeremy and Brian joined me for a spirited conversation about doing things differently to record Chopper. Working with first-time producer Dan Beckner from Wolf Parade, and how fun and collaborative that experience was. Composing with and incorporating more keyboards and synthesizers into Kiwi Jr.'s sound. The show The Masked Singer, and getting songwriting advice from the likes of Mike Watt and John K. Sampson. Inviting Dorothea Paz to make significant vocal contributions to Chopper. Jeremy's new singing styles and Thurston Moore's influence. Touring again, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a wonderful record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and friendly staff who will happily help you with anything you need. Say you want to order the new album Chopper by Kiwi Jr., which is out on Sub Pop Records. Well, you go to blackbird.ca there and you see what can be done. They'll help you, I bet. That's what they do. Plus, in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario. Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 708 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Jeremy Gaudette and Brian Murphy of Kiwi Jr., with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm good, Vish. How you doing?
I'm well. It's nice to see you. Where in the world are you?
I'm here with my bandmate and buddy Jeremy in my apartment on Dundas Street, Toronto, Ontario.
Nice. Is this a new apartment compared to the last time you were on the show?
Probably, yeah. I moved here in May last year, so a little over a year.
Yeah. And yeah, it looks different.
And which famous Canadian musician did this apartment used to belong to?
This is Moje Rosenberg Fisher of Absolutely Free and of Memory Pearl.
Oh, nice. Was he the absolute previous tenant?
Yeah, I think he lived here for like 10 years. So I think a lot of Absolutely Free stuff got done here and his own solo project, Memory Pearl, stuff got done here. So good history.
Nice. Nice. That's good vibes. That's good juju, I believe is maybe what it's called on the streets.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know. Anyway, it's nice to see you again. Jeremy, I hear tell you're there too, and I can see tell that you're there as well. How are you?
I'm okay, Vish. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back on the show. And let me say off the top, congratulations on this wonderful new record. You must be very proud. I've been listening to it nonstop, almost to a point where my wife's like, you're listening to it again? Can you just... stop it with the chopper? And I'm like, no, it's really good. And then I had it on at breakfast. I was making oatmeal for me and my daughter, and my wife was there, and I saw her involuntarily bobbing her head. She liked it. So all this to say, congratulations. How are you feeling, Jeremy, about the thing?
Good. But did you just compare our record to oatmeal?
No.
If it was going to be a breakfast meal, is the record oatmeal?
As long as it's not granola.
No, she had finished a bowl of granola. Let's be clear. We're Guelph people in Edmonton. So there's going to be oatmeal and granola. That's just the way it is. She had her oatmeal, or rather, she had her granola. I had a hankering for oatmeal. So, by the way, when I do the oatmeal, it's as good as the album Chopper by Kiwi Jr. It's eclectic. It's dynamic. I had the oats. I had a banana cut into slices. I had a candied ginger, hemp seeds, chocolate chips, brown sugar, cinnamon, oat milk. Come on.
Too many ingredients.
Well,
no,
that's what made
good.
It.
You're selling that's me on Vish oatmeal here.
It's very delicious and it's very filling. And I've barely eaten today because I had oatmeal. Anyway, it's a wonderful record. Brian, this record marks a bit of a departure. Do you have a producer for the first time? You have some guest vocalists. Am I missing anything else?
That's about it. We recorded the majority of it in a studio that was like on the far east end of Toronto. So it was a little bit out of our sort of normal zones where we would normally hang out and work. So mm-hmm. That was kind of cool. Just like roaming around a totally different neighborhood we weren't familiar with.
I stayed in a hotel.
You stayed in a hotel in Toronto?
Yeah.
You live in Toronto. Why would you do that?
Yeah, it's so far away and I had to finish writing it. So there were some lyrics on the record that were like 75%, and I needed to get it done. And if I was going to be going to the studio at, you know, 9, 10 a.m. and not getting home till 11 or something, it didn't really allow for any time to work on things.
I see. Are you not a studio jotter? Do you revise things in the studio, Jeremy?
A little bit. It was also just to make me happy so I wouldn't be really grumpy towards the other bandmates and lose my head in the middle of recording, to be honest.
Yeah.
No, and I think it worked out pretty good.
Yeah, I think the original idea was to leave the city and record somewhere totally new, and that those plans fell through. So this was kind of a happy medium of sort of not in the city, but still kind of in the city.
I appreciate that. Jeremy's alluding to other bandmates, and I must say I miss them. Every time Kiwi Jr. has been on the show, by the way, this is not to disparage either of you fine people. You're fine. You're just fine. But
just
in the
past,
this is, I think, the third Kiwi Jr. Podcast episode that we've done on this show. And every other time, everyone's been here. Who are we missing today, Jeremy?
We're missing drummer boy Broen, and we're missing bassman extraordinaire Mike. And we just got back from tour a couple days ago, and I think their work schedules were pretty hectic. They couldn't really swing anything this week at all.
No, I appreciate that, and all due respect to Mike. Brian, I miss Broen. I feel like Broen really liked
him. I miss Broen, too. I never get to see the guy. He's so busy with work.
What's the job again that Broen does, just to de-romanticize the whole idea of being in a band? What's the other thing he does?
He's an editor for a Business Wire magazine.
So. Wow, it's very specific.
I don't think that's true.
I'm not sure. I don't even know what he does.
I just say he works downtown, capital D downtown.
He's a downtown area worker?
Yeah, very, very much so.
Yeah, so yeah. I just want to say, I feel like Broen really jazzed up the last episode. There was a lot of chaos with Broen, and I enjoyed it, and I miss him.
It's all just Kanye and the Strokes, isn't it?
That's right. We had some fun times talking about Yeezy or Ye or whatever he's called these days, and yeah, that's true. Anyway, I just wanted to acknowledge them. Back to what you were saying, Brian, but I'm going to take it to Jeremy. Some departures then. Studio, who is the producer? This is significant.
Dan Beckner produced it, and we worked with a new engineer as well, Alex Gamble, who mixed and recorded the record. And we worked in, like Brian said, a new studio in the East End of Toronto, and then we mixed it at Alex's home studio, which is called Raven Tape, which is also in the East End. And so just like some new players and places.
So why all the newness? Third album, right? Three appearances, also third up. You guys are so nice. You've been on the show every time you put out a record. It means a lot to me. It's like a tradition now, I think, right? Brian, isn't this a tradition? Isn't this part of the deal in Kiwi Jr.?
Big time. I as soon as we start recording, I start to think about, you know, the taping of this podcast, how the recording should go in order to help make this better. You know? Like I play a guitar part and I think, I don't think Vish would like that, so we should change it.
I like that. I figured so heavily. No, back to the original question that I was trying to ask. Jeremy, why do you suppose all the new things for this one?
Well, I don't think it was really a question of let's change things up for the third record, you know, which is a trap a lot of bands fall into. But we decided to change things up for the third record.
Yeah.
It just might work for us. We knew we wanted to work with a producer, and we had a list of guys. Dan was at the top. He said yes, and then we just took it from there. And you know, making a record in Toronto, there's only so many studios and people you can work with, and there's scheduling and everything like that. And to be honest, we had a pretty tight window to make this album. We only had a few weeks once we started, and that's due to like how long it takes to get your vinyls made and things like that. You really got to set your release window like a year and a half in advance.
Oh, I see. External pressure, external time pressures. It wasn't Broen being like, come on, let's go, let's get it done. I'm Broen. I'm bossy.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Just forces at work.
I see. Okay. So, Brian, it stands to reason based on what we've been saying, and I hadn't really thought of this. The previous two records were self-produced. Is that an accurate way of putting it?
Yeah, we had engineers obviously, and Graham Walsh was a big part of the second record, Cooler Returns. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it was like, you know, us coming up with, you know, fleshing out the songs, coming up with the parts and stuff, and towards the end result. So you could say, yeah, produced by Kiwi Jr. if you want.
Yeah, as I recall, though, I think you did have an experience with the first record where you did work with someone external, and then it didn't quite pan out. And then I think maybe, is this right, Jeremy? Am I remembering things correctly? You then reverted to being like, you know what? Let's just do this ourselves. Is that right?
Half right. We did work with some other people and then had to pivot halfway through. But it wasn't a producer. It was some, you know, mixing and things like that.
Oh, okay.
And that was just our own fault of not knowing what we were looking for and things like that.
Do you like being told what to do? Do you like having your ideas that come from your heart and your mind second-guessed by some stranger? Is that a fun thing to have happen?
Well, if you're talking about Dan, yeah.
No, I wasn't. I was talking about people generally in your life, not even musically. I just mean, do you have control issues like I do?
I mean, Dan wasn't like trying to rewrite the songs and you know, he wasn't trying to like change everything from the ground up. He just had a lot of cool ideas of like, he was affecting a lot of stuff. Like even when we were just doing scratch keyboard, vocal guitar takes, he was grabbing stuff and manipulating it in really cool ways. But he wasn't coming in and being like, guys, you need to, or Jeremy, you need to rewrite this chorus. It's no good and stuff like that. There was none of that. It was just more like sound manipulation and really cool tone building.
He was just like a really good basketball coach in that he would like set us up to discover our own things, mm-hmm. and, you know, kind of manage personality and make sure we used our time effectively. But then also, you know, there's a bunch of examples on this record where I'd be doing a take of a vocal or something, and Dan would just raise his hand and say, "What about this?"
Uh-huh.
And it ends up changing.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
There's lots of different instruments and grooves and even lyrics that Dan was definitely involved in.
Interesting. Okay. So I think I'm glad I went down this road. It was getting a little dicey there. Maybe I was barking up the wrong tree. You know what I'm saying? But now I think about it, because I know Dan a little bit. Actually, you know, we've interacted a bunch over the last 20 years, and he's opinionated as a person in the world. He's opinionated. So I appreciate what you must have appreciated by putting him at the top of that list you're talking about. Very gifted musician, long track record. Did he have a lot of production credits that appealed to either of you? Brian, do you remember in the conversation? Oh, like, was it just like Dan from Wolf Parade and Operators and Handsome Furs? Or was it, you know, he worked on a couple of records that we really liked. Which one of those was it?
Yeah, he actually does. This is his first official production credit. So we weren't, you know, after him in that regard. But obviously, we just love the records he obviously produced, you know, like produced the Operators stuff, yeah. The Handsome Furs stuff. Like he's the guy behind it all. And, you know, a big chunk of Wolf Parade. So yeah, we just liked all those records, and so we decided to get him. But it wasn't like he didn't produce officially like another singer-songwriter's record or anything like that. This is technically his first production credit.
That's okay. This is getting more and more fascinating to me. So did it occur to him to come to you and say, you know what, I think I'm ready to produce a record. I like you guys. Jeremy, what do you think? Or was it like, Dan, we made this list and somehow you're at the top of it? Which came first, the chicken or the egg? You know where I'm coming from, Jeremy. Can you explain this?
Well, you'll find this interesting. He was actually going to produce our first record.
Oh.
Way back in like 2016 when we started recording Football Money, we sent our demos to Dan and he wrote us this really long, generous, kind email just saying how much he liked the songs and stuff, and we were all set to work together to the point where we had travel plans and everything was right about to happen. And then I think for the last second, he, you know, either he or us or something happened where we got a gig offer or he got a gig offer, and we tried to push it to the next week, and it just all sort of fell apart.
Oh man, I see. Okay,
so that was supposed to happen, you know, that's like 5-6 years ago, 7 years ago, maybe even.
Yeah.
And so we've kept in touch and we've opened for
Wolf Parade and Handsome Furs, or Operators, I mean, doing a Handsome Furs set, I guess, technically, in the last few years. And yeah, that we just had this idea that we should finally actually do this.
I see. Okay. So it's like a full circle, not to suggest that the circle is closed, but it's a little bit of a full circle. Sorry, guys. This is more of an intervention for you guys. It's over. It's done. No, I didn't mean it that way. No, it's nice. That's a nice story in itself. So among the production elements that Kiwi Junior fans will pick up on are the keyboards, the synthesizers. Where did the compositional aspect of that begin from? Was that something that happened in the studio with Dan, where he was like, you know what would be a good texture? Or did you guys come in with parts composed? I'm going to take this to guitarist Brian, because I know for guitarists, nothing is more threatening than the synthesizer. Nothing is more threatening than the keyboards. For your role, you're like, uh-oh, there's someone trying to take my job. Brian, where did this all come from?
Well, Jeremy had demos written during, you know, peak pandemic vibes, and a lot of those demos were very keyboard heavy, on a lot of Casio, like little home keyboards and stuff. I think just out of convenience of like a small, trying to demo in a small apartment rather than setting up big amps and mics and stuff. So that's definitely the like the nucleus were those like keyboard heavy demos from Jeremy. But interestingly enough, when we started to record, like once we got the bass and drums down on day one, Dan suggested we rent like a Moog keyboard, which is, I've never experienced a recording process where like the second you get the bass and drums down, you start recording a Moog keyboard. So that was really cool. As far as intimidation goes, I'm fine with it. I love it. I'm just trying to figure out how to play it live. That's my task at this moment.
You say, did you rent the Moog or did you buy the Moog?
Well, the first studio we were in didn't have one, so we rented it. And then we ended up at Alex, the engineer's mixing studio, and he had like an even better one, so we used that as well.
I see. Okay. Jeremy, is it uncommon for you to compose demos on keys as opposed to guitar?
Well, I think all the last record, Cooler Returns, was all guitar demos for the songs that we actually made demos for. So yeah, a little bit, but I've always tinkered. I don't really know what I'm doing. Like I'm playing chord, like, you know, little chords with one hand and things like that.
Nobody knows what they're doing. I just, as a general rule, don't you find that nobody knows what they're doing? You ever hire a contractor and they have a belt? Fake it till you fail. Isn't that a lyric on the album? Yeah. I that's where I was thinking there. Anyway, so, is it just the context as Brian was describing it? You're in a cozy little fun apartment with lots of books and it's comfortable and you just don't want to disturb the neighbors. That's what Brian said. I'm just paraphrasing. And it's, you know, there's lots of pillows around and it's very cozy and you just don't want to make a lot of noise. Is that why you went to the keys?
No, not at all. my apartment situation was chaotic actually at the time, and they were selling the house from under us, and somehow I got trapped into like acting as realtor and was like showing it to the, you know, buyers and stuff. Let's not go down this road, Vish. But I will.
No, I didn't mean to. You're the one who opened up the
can. I took it there. Yeah.
There was
I want to hear more about Jeremy's realtor career.
You can read about it in Business Wire magazine, I heard.
I like how we're calling this a magazine. No, I was just refuting your idea about all these pillows. Weren't that many pillows.
Sorry, this is all from Brian. I was paraphrasing Brian's description of your dwelling. No, I'm sorry. It is not unusual for a musician in a rock band to say, I had to make the demos in a really late at night while my kids were sleeping, so that's why they sounded like that. You know what I'm getting at there? Like it's.
I do, yeah. But I could make as much noise as I wanted. I was living in this really big house, like this apartment in this really big house, and all the other units were empty because, like I said, they were selling the house. So I just had like, you know, free reign over this Victorian, you know, 4-story house. Hmm. And we were making, my girlfriend and I were making a lot of noise playing keyboard and guitar and everything else at the time. I think the keyboard was just fun to switch things up, and it was there. Hmm. I think I was also listening to a lot of The Weeknd at the time.
Oh.
Just because, like, every store you go into, he's on.
Yeah.
And
very popular.
Every radio. Yeah. And I got into that last Weeknd record, and I was kind of playing keyboards, maybe trying to sound a little bit like that.
Right.
On my demos. Not so much on the album, but...
I see. This mansion you describe, I feel like the first time we met at some sort of mansion, but wasn't it Mike's place that he was renting, or was that your place? Do you remember the...
No, that was Mike's house. I don't live in... I live in a one-bedroom apartment, but I just mean that there's a bunch of other apartments in the house.
No. I gather that. Oh, that whole house was Mike's house when I first met you guys? Is that right? And Ron's?
No.
Okay.
No,
sorry.
He was just renting that.
Anyway, sorry. I just wanted to clarify that because that was a nice house. I still remember walking in there and you guys were listening to Elvis Costello. And that's what I mostly remember. And then I think Brian remembers that I was hankering for pizza. Is that what was going on?
That's right. You kept talking about you're going to Fresca, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Couldn't wait.
Did you?
You were hustling to get through the interview so you could get your pizza.
I was hungry, and I needed the pizza. Yeah, that's right. Have you tried the Fresca? Fresco? Fresca? I think it's Fresca, not Fresca.
Fresca. I've had Fresco, yeah.
Yes,
it's good.
It's good, yeah. How is Toronto? You know, we didn't even talk about time and space stuff because I moved us along quickly, but you guys, you're in Toronto. Since we've last spoken, things have opened up, and... That's pretty much it. Nothing's really shut down except for various people's bodies because more people are getting the sickness. But, Brian, what's the state of Toronto from your perspective? How's it going there?
Oh, it's going. Full throttle.
It's wide open. Everything's just happening.
Oh, yeah. Every, you know, Jays games are packed. The street bars are packed and concerts are going. And it's nice to see, you know. It's obviously... It's what you want, but I hope not at too much of an expense. But yeah. To be honest, I feel like Toronto's never... I've lived here for, wow, like 18 years, maybe more, and I've never seen it this busy.
It's busier than... Yeah, because people are all pent up. They want to go do stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah it's yeah, big time.
Jeremy, have you guys played some shows? Not even a small smattering of shows. You did a significant number of dates somewhat recently, right?
That's right, yeah. We went down through the U.S. to do a handful of Northeast dates and some Midwest dates, and yeah, it's probably the longest string of dates we've done as a band. We don't tour very often, right?
You mean since your inception or since the pandemic?
Since the inception.
Really? Well, yeah, you all have day jobs and other things to do, right? That's probably why?
Yeah.
Yeah, we operate under the parameters of vacation days.
Right. I understand that. Now, so how experientially, Jeremy, how was that to play shows again? You sound like you're enthused. It was the most you've done, but experientially, what was that like after all the lockdown and whatnot?
It's good shows and bad shows. And the bad shows, you know, weren't even that bad. There's always some really nice people that come out. But you sort of get the feeling that, you know, rock concerts are not really the thing to be doing right now.
Everyone is doing it with some measure of tentativeness, but also, you're right, like moral questioning is in the air. Is that what you're getting at?
That's part of it, but I also am commenting on maybe it's not something that a lot of people in their 20s are doing right now.
Right.
Going to see rock bands, maybe.
They're going to see The Weeknd?
Man, he had to cancel his concert here because of Rogers...
Oh, were you supposed to go to his show before the blackout?
No, but I still feel for all of his fans.
Yeah, that was rough. For those who don't recall, here in Canada, there was a major telecommunications power outage, and all sorts of stuff was canceled. And among the casualties was The Weeknd. There, they couldn't play a show. That was it at the big? Was it at the Rogers, the Sky Dome?
No, it was at the
arena.
Scotiabank, I think. One or the other.
It's the Air Canada Centre and the Sky Dome. This is who I am. I'm never going to not call...
You're dating yourself here.
No, I am dating myself. I'm very lonely. No, just kidding. What I was going to say there about all those things is, Brian, you mentioned it's full throttle. Do you go to shows?
Not really. I mean, we've been busy. Like, you know, we just got back 3 days ago, 2 days ago. So, yeah, I mean, I've been to a handful of shows, but not a lot. Jeremy went to see Apollo Ghosts recently. That was apparently really good.
Nice. Did, yeah. I love those guys.
They're great.
That's a great band. Okay, cool. So this is what I'm getting at, because I know I've talked to some musicians who are begrudgingly back at it. Some who are stoked, like couldn't be more psyched to be back and doing it. But there's also this like I think Jeremy's describing, this low level, like, are we supposed to be doing this? And so I've just thought of this, because I am a show going guy, and I haven't been, and I get invited as to, people are coming through now, and they say, can you come? Hey, it's Spoon. Want to come see us? And I go, oh, thanks, Spoon. Not gonna. And then I say, oh, well, maybe I'll show up. And then I don't. And I don't know about you guys. Like, Jeremy, are you normally an active show going person? And if so, have you made an effort? Like, it sounds like you went to one show, but are you going to fewer things as a fan?
I think, yeah. I think it's, you know, you see this all over the place, across many different industries or whatever you want to call it, where everyone was shut down and now it's harder to bring people back.
Is it because they don't miss it, or because, yeah, that's an interesting point, because from my perspective, it's because I'm paying attention to the news, but I think other people have not paying attention to the news. They've just gotten used to not doing certain things. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you send everyone to work from home, and then all of a sudden, you know, offices are closing and stuff because everyone's just like, yeah, this works. And I think the same thing was kind of happening with nightlife and concerts and you know, restaurants or whatever, movies.
Hmm.
People are just kind of like, they discovered they were happy to just to hang out at home.
If I don't have to leave my house, why would I? I think that's a pervasive sentiment right now, which is probably not good. On some level, Brian, how, given your vocational pursuits, like if that's in the air, first of all, do you acknowledge that what Jeremy and I are saying is absolutely true?
Yeah, I think there's some truth to it for sure. There's definitely, you know, hesitance, like yourself as a great example. You would normally be going to shows all the time, but aren't because of, you know, the ongoing pandemic. So yeah, there's definitely truth to that. It's obvious that we're nowhere near back to normal. Like,
there's actually, you know, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, and I may, this might be hyperbolic. I think there's three active plagues right now. Sorry.
Oh, sweet.
There's the thing, and then there's the pandemic that we've been going through, then there's the monkeypox, and then polio. I was like, come on, this has got to be a joke. Polio is resurgent. I'm like, what is happening? The earth is kicking us off. I don't even understand what's happening.
Exactly.
So it is hard.
It's rejecting us.
It is hard. Brian, you seem like you're in an okay space and trying to get back to normal. Is that fair?
Yeah, sure. That's fair. I mean, I'm just happy to be, like, you know, even when we started making Cooler Returns, our second record, like, over a year ago, just the act of getting into a rehearsal room with the guys and making noise and working on songs was, like, enough for me to, you know, feel better about everything. And, and you know, we obviously keep a bit of a tight circle within us, and it's, we have a lot of fun. We have a lot of laughs, you know, but yeah, we're definitely nowhere near back to normal. Whatever you want to call that.
Yeah. I was trying to figure out, Jeremy, Brian, as you know, if Jeremy were here, I'd tell it to his face. Great writer, great lyricist, also has a very unique knack for phrasing. So it's not only the words that I get hooked on, it's the way he puts them together. Don't tell Jeremy I said this. It's embarrassing. But I wondered if any of what we've sort of been alluding to has pervaded your writing, Jeremy. Now I'm going to acknowledge that you are, in fact, here. That's the shift. Plot twist, Jeremy has been here the whole time. There's a song on the record called The Masked Singer. This caught my young daughter's ear today. Because she loves that show. I hate that show. I hate it. It's for those who don't know, it's a reality show. But I said to her, I said, well, maybe he's talking about being a singer and during a pandemic, because you might have to wear a mask on stage. And she's like, I don't think so. Also, by the way, she said, I don't like that he's saying this. And I said, what do you mean? She's like, well, that's a TV show. He shouldn't be saying Masked Singer. Make of that what you will. I don't know. Anyway, Jeremy, can you weed through my reasoning here or my question to tell me if you felt like you were making a little double entendre, if you will, about the pandemic? Or were you actually, I think it is more about reality TV generally, but have you seen that show that I'm talking about, first of all, The Masked Singer?
Yeah, of course.
Well, you don't have to say,
wrote a song. I wrote a song about it.
Okay, so it's definitely about the television show, The Masked Singer. Jeremy, explain to the people listening, what is The Masked Singer, though? Because I haven't done a good job of that right now.
Well, let me back up for a minute. I just kept seeing these posters all around town for, like, what would be, like, you know, somebody in a big mascot's outfit, and it would say The Masked Singer on NBC or Global or whatever it is. And I thought it was such a great title for a show. I was hooked.
Oh.
It sounds so romantic, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
and
sure.
And so with this record, I also wrote... I came up with like the titles of songs before I wrote the songs for the most part. And I was like, oh yeah, I got to have a song called The Masked Singer.
You went title first. Is that... That's got to be unusual.
Yeah, but that was a challenge I kind of set out for myself. We did Mike Watt's radio show when we were promoting our last record.
I'm supposed to be on that show. He told me I could be on that show, and then he went on like the craziest, longest tour ever, and now I'm going to write Mike an email. Anyway, sorry, what was going on there?
Watt from Pedro. Yeah, it was really fun to talk to him, by the way. But one of the things he was asking me about was like, you ever write the title first before you write the song? And I was like, not really. And he was like, that's the only way I can write songs. Otherwise, how do you know what you're talking about? And I was kind of like, huh, that's interesting. And I just like that stayed in the back of my mind for like a year. And then when I started to write this record, if I had an idea for a song, I would kind of just, you know, try to shape it into a title. And then, you know, the next day or whenever I sat down to actually work on the song itself, I had kind of a goal or like a checkpoint to get to.
That's a very fascinating parameter to give yourself as a writer. That's really interesting. I mean, I could see a novelist doing this, or, you know, an author, to be like, it's called Shitty Cabin in the Forest. Okay, now I got my juices are flowing now. That's really fascinating. So it paid off, would you say?
I mean, I enjoy doing it. I also think this record has more interesting titles than the last record.
You have a song that I really particularly love called Clerical Sleep. And I thought, this made me think of my time working at my dad's office in the summers, where I would literally fall asleep. I'd go up to like some weird store. There was nothing for me to really do, but he managed to like, just do something. They'll pay you. Shh. You know, there wasn't like a whole lot of productive work. So I'd fall asleep in these dusty binders, or I had a system where I would work for 2 minutes and close my eyes for three. I would time myself to take little naps. Anyway, clerical sleep made me think of that. I Googled the term, does not exist. I was like, this must be a thing that's clerical sleep. Did you make this up?
Yeah.
You're an office worker?
Well, I don't know where that came from. I just had this idea of clerical sleep, and once that phrase, or once those two words combined kind of took hold, I wrote that song very, very quickly.
Okay.
And it's funny you saying you were saying you Googled it, because I also Googled it like recently. I was thinking like, wait, did I take this from something? And I was glad that, you know, there wasn't like a Drake song called Clerical Sleep or something that I just jotted down in my phone at 2 a.m.
I guess it could potentially also have some sort of like religious connotation. I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah, it's both. Like for me, it's just about real rest, you know, like big, bold lettered rest, spiritual, physical, mental. And yeah, there's a lot going on in that song in particular, but I feel like it's all kind of grounded in this idea of, if I was working 9 to 5, if I went to church regularly, if I exercised more, if I did this, you know, then I would really be at peace.
Right.
And I could get some rest at night, some things like that.
Yeah, clerical sleep. It's fascinating to ponder for myself. Brian, you are very familiar with Jeremy and his writing. Has anything about this batch of songs astounded you, mystified you, made you think, what the hell is going on over there? Disappointed you? Were you like, I must intervene, this is bad? Anything like that?
There's definitely some... I remember just like listening to demos and trying to figure out parts, come up with parts or whatever. And there's definitely some like verses and lines that I found pretty interesting that I, you know, didn't quite understand. Actually, the last verse in Clerical Sleep being one of them, about the man with the prosthetic leg. I remember thinking, like, what is this guy talking about? But then when I asked him in the studio, what is this verse all about, he explained it to me, and it was actually quite hilarious and made me like it even more.
It's
so,
a bit of a non... That whole... If I may interject for just a moment, but that whole section seems to me to be a non sequitur. What did you read it as? Like, it doesn't seem to have much to do with anything else that I... It just happens, and then the song's done, and you're like, what the hell was that?
I love that we're both talking about Jeremy's lyrics, and he's sitting, like, a foot away.
As I said earlier, for those listening, if Jeremy were here, we would take this right to him, but he's not, and that's just the way things have to be today. Anyway, sorry, what were you going to say there, Brian?
Yeah, I don't know. I just found it really... I didn't necessarily think, like, that verse or whatever was a non sequitur. I just found it sort of... interesting, you know, in a slightly confusing maybe way, but in also a good way. But like I said, anytime I had those kind of moments of like, what does this mean? What is he talking about? I would ask him about it in the studio, and he would explain it to me, and it would make me just like it even more. Like once I heard the story behind it or the meaning behind it, I would like it more than I did.
I know a man with the most advanced robot prosthetic in the history of the world, built in a lab. It costs $2 million, but he hates it, can't stand it, never wears it, just sits there. Now, I'm not saying that the rest of the song has a coherent narrative per se, but it is a final blast of a lyrical expression. Jeremy's singing in a heightened way. To me, it seems separate from the rest of the song. Jeremy, please answer this question. Where did this come from for us? Like, we're both confused idiots, Brian and I. It's safe to say. I don't want to mischaracterize Brian, but we're both idiots. Where did this come from? Why are you yelling at the end of the song about this thing that's clearly based on the plot line of the film The Fugitive? What's happening?
All right, let me rapid fire give you some fast facts about this line. One... That's the only line that Dan Boeckner sings on the record. You can hear his baritone underneath singing it an octave below, or saying it an octave below, in kind of a Vincent Price narration.
I assume that was Brian, actually, but then I looked at the credits, and yes, you're clear. We're all clear. Jeremy's correct. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Two. That line originally said, built in a lab, it costs $1 million, and while I was doing vocals, Dan from the control booth held up a piece of paper that just had $2 million written on it and just stuck it up to the glass. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's better.
Now what?
And then I was like, rewind me back. And then I was like, $2 million? It's just better than $1
million. Why?
It's like somehow less. Like, we were talking about this after he did the vocal take, where like $1 million is its own sort of thing. Like, it's just like, yeah, it's $1 million. It's a lot. It's just like this crazy amount of money. Whereas, like, somehow $2 million is more specific and, like...
It's less valuable.
It sounds less. You know what I mean?
Well, I will also say that to say, oh, that must have cost $1 million, it's almost like a colloquialism.
Yeah.
$2 million exactly sounds like, oh, it legitimately cost $2 million. Like, that. This part of the story is true. Yeah, I get it.
So that's an example of Dan coming up with good ideas in the studio, by the way.
The other thing about Dan that I'll say, I said he was opinionated, very funny. He's a funny guy.
Very.
Very funny, very funny. Smart guy. Yeah. It was really great to hang out with him the whole time.
Yeah, okay. we were mixing, and he was like, I think we were mixing on Halloween, and he was like full vampire costume. He was just cracking us up the whole time.
Yeah, he's very amusing. Sorry, Jeremy, you were going to say something else about...
Let's get back to my lightning round.
Sorry, go ahead.
What did I say? Okay, Dan sings on it.
$2 million.
Let me change it to $2 million.
He took it out of the took it out of the bare naked ladies zone for you there. That's good.
Exactly. I was going to say that also. the genesis of this line is was like a clickbait ad I saw on the internet, you know, where you're like scrolling the internet and then it's like, you won't believe what Kelsey Grammer's stepson looks like now or something. And I saw just this ad, and it was like this man has the most expensive robotic arm ever, .. but he hates it. And I was like, oh, well, I gotta write about this. And then I wrote that line and I showed my girlfriend the song, and turns out her uncle who I know is a one arm, has one arm, and he also has a very expensive prosthetic, and he never wears it, and he doesn't like it, and he you know, he's accomplished so much without it, and I had to say, no, it's not about him. I saw this stupid thing on the internet, and it just stayed with me for a long time. But once she said that, I was kind of like, all right, this is going to work in the song. The next fact I was going to say is John K. Sampson told me to cut this line, and then in the studio I was like, I think it's too good. I got to keep it.
How did it come to pass that John K. Sampson would even be exposed to this line and be able to offer you advice on it?
Well, I reached out to him. I'm such a fan of his, and I was listening to a lot of his records over the last year or so. And this was a weird record to write because I was starting from scratch. This wasn't built upon demos or old ideas that had been gestating or that were left over from the last album. This was like, okay, clean slate, write 10 songs about whatever you want. And I didn't show any of the guys in the band the lyrics, really, you know, as they were written. They heard the demos, but they never got lyric sheets or anything until we were in the studio. And that's just because I was nervous. And I wanted to reach out to someone who I respected to take a look at them and give me some advice. And so I John was someone who I wanted to talk to about that. And he was very helpful with a number of things. But I didn't take his advice on this one, and now I'm being grilled online on the Vish Khan comedy podcast hour about it.
Yeah, that's the way it works, though. I think it stuck out for me, and it stuck out for Brian, so that's where we're at. I wonder if... So we've talked about...
But can't you just imagine like a stadium full of people singing that line?
Yeah.
Singing along at a Kiwi Junior concert, like 40,000 people at Wembley.
Yeah, I could see, like, arms raised, fist pumping. Yeah, sure. Or, I mean, sorry, prosthetic arm, fist pumping. Yeah, I think you've found an audience for sure. Yeah, I think there's something to that. I wonder, given all the insights you sought or were given by the likes of Dan Bechner or John K. Sampson, did anyone inform some of your approach to singing on this particular record? Because I've noticed a few... I don't want to call them departures, but like a song like The Extra Seas of the Film, that's like some of your finest singing, and it's some of your most heartfelt singing, if I may. You tend to be someone who I think will, like maybe like John Sampson a little bit, will speak sing a little bit, just a little bit. Like you're singing, don't get me wrong. I don't need to explain this to you. I think you know where I'm coming from.
I know what you're talking
about. Yeah. But The Extra Seas of the Film, would you agree? An anomaly maybe in your catalog thus far?
Yeah. We did a bunch of different vocal takes for that song. And in the end, what I ended up trying to go for, not necessarily what I was trying to go for, but, you know, you come up with shorthand in the studio where you might say, like, all right, let's do that, you know, that Rolling Stones drum fill one more time or something, you know.
Just
short, like
just shorthand, sure, yeah.
Yeah, and what we called the vocal tone and take, or the vocal tone and style, I guess, of this song, The Extra Seas of the Film, was the Thurston Moore vocals.
Yes.
Because we were listening to Superstar.
Oh, the Carpenters cover.
The Carpenters cover, yeah.
He has that effect a lot on, I can see it peeking out behind me, my copy of Psychic Hearts, his solo album.
Oh, you got a huge Sonic Youth poster in the background.
Oh,
too.
Yeah, I do have that, yeah.
I just saw that now.
Yeah, a couple of people have commented on it recently for some reason. It's drawing a lot of attention. Lee Ronaldo actually wanted me to send him that, because, but I'd already mounted it, and I don't want to... I like Sonic Youth. You like Thurston Moore, or was it just something that was floating in the air around the time of this vocal?
I love Sonic Youth and Thurston solo stuff too. Yeah, but for some reason when we were doing this, it was kind of like, I think I did a take, and then it was like, I need to sing quieter. I think I need to kind of get whispery, and then we were, let's cue up Sonic Youth Superstar cover. I did a take like that.
Well, it's lovely. I just want to say, and it's again one of my favorite batch of lyrics. Some sort of, I think, fantastical Los Angeles landscape, right?
Yeah.
Is it actually? There's a lot of pop culture as usual, I think, in Kiwi Junior. If for those listening closely, and you'll recognize Toronto things like Joe Shuster Way and Superman. For those of you. Who was it the other day who couldn't remember his name? I think, again, it was my daughter. She's like, what's the guy's name? He's very good at everything. I'm like, Superman? Yeah, yeah, Superman. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, that guy. So anyway, always pop culture stuff, but that set of lyrics really takes me into some sort of Los Angeles setting. Is that based on anything real, this narrative?
Totally, yeah. That's a song that I was really proud of, even just getting the demo down. I don't want to go through it line by line with you, but...
Why? Because you don't like me? Because I'm offensive to you? Does my presence annoy you? Is it the end of our time together? Why?
We can do this off air if you like.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. We do. That's an intervention for me, too, listeners. People don't
I'm
know
just
this,
kidding.
But, no, sorry. Go ahead. Yeah. I don't want you to over-explain things either.
Just like the first verse is talking about this guy telling the story about how he was at Kobe Bryant's last NBA game. And then in the end, he just says he was at a bar watching on TV. Yeah. And I was in L.A. and I watched Kobe Bryant's last game on TV at a bar in L.A. And I remember telling people that story as if it was like really cool and then just realizing, God, this is the most boring anecdote of all time, and it's this really humbling moment, and I put it in a song, and so that's the first verse.
Were you the guy aiming the jar of gin?
No, I was the guy looking to overtake the guy aiming the jar of gin.
Nice.
I don't want to, first of all, was it a home game, Kobe's last game, or were they away?
Yeah, they played the Grizzlies.
And Flea played the national anthem on his
face. Oh, I've actually seen that.
That's pretty sweet.
Sorry.
It was crazy, though. He got like 60 points or something. I mean, they just kept passing it to
Flea?
Him.
Oh, no, Kobe.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, Flea got 60 points. 60, they subbed him in.
There's a soft opening. She'll be there if you want to stop by. Flirting with the human scorpion jacket from Drive. He's a haircut aiming a jar of gin, and he talks about Los Angeles. That's a cue for you to jump in. That's great. I just want to tell you, I don't want to, everyone's got the next verse is about the Kobe Bryant stuff, which is amusing. Of course, it has a sadder aspect to it now that Kobe has passed away tragically. But I will say, very clever. I like everything about it. And I just want to commend you as I often, have I done this before, Jeremy? Have you felt the love from Bish to this extent?
Well, last podcast, you were roasting us, I think.
You were being a bully.
Yeah.
Was I? I don't remember it. Was I?
I haven't gone back and listened to it, but I remember you giving Broen a hard time.
Well Broen and I thought deserved
it. Yeah, me too.
Did I give you a hard time, Brian?
Yeah, you're going on about how I'm some kind of born entertainer or some shit.
Oh, that's right. That was in the clip. You said it. You said
I 100% did not say that.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize this caused... any kind of, whatever you want to call it.
It's all water under the bridge.
Well, you're back. Clearly, it wasn't that bad. I don't know.
Clearly, I'm fine.
I met you guys, I am the loosest with you of almost any guest, and it's bad. It doesn't end up being the best show, maybe, does it? I like it, but I love you guys.
What are you trying? You're saying that every time you interview us, it's not the best
show.
No,
I think it is. I really enjoyed the last one, and when I found out that Broen in particular, no offense to Mike, when I found out Broen couldn't be here, I was like, oh, I got no sparring partner. I'm just a guy with boxing gloves on. I got nobody. Nobody's going to fight back.
Yeah, you got two punching bags.
Brian, do you do a lot of singing on this record? We mentioned Dan does a bunch. Did you do a lot?
No, I don't think maybe one song, Downtown.
Yeah, you sing back up.
Oh, man. Downtown area blues. Right. Sorry, I forget the blues part.
But we left all that to Dorothea Paz because she, in my opinion, she kind of brought that record to another level on the selected songs she does sing on.
I'm glad you brought that up. It was on my mind. We got lost in LA there for a few moments, and I apologize. Dorothea is wonderful. Love her record that I heard most recently. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, and someone please correct me.
Anything Can't Happen.
That's the one. Had it playing on the turntable for quite a while. Never took it off. Liked it a lot. How did you come to befriend Dorothea, Brian? And how did it come to be that she plays a very prominent role on this record, I would say. Can you talk about those things?
I didn't know her. That was Jeremy that kind of brought her into the studio. I was just there. It was me and Jeremy and the engineer, and she came in and started singing on, I think the first tune she did was Clerical Sleep, and I just right away, you just kind of like, oh, that's it. That's the game changer. That's going to elevate the song, And it was fun to watch, really. It was just, like, really fun to watch.
And you're saying it was Jeremy's call. It feels like a few of these things were Jeremy's call, maybe, that we're talking
I just
about.
Mean he knew, I didn't know her. None of us
knew her. No. I appreciate that part of it. But by asking her, was it Jeremy's initiative to just bring these... This is another new dynamic to the band, I would
say. Yeah, I think we wanted a female vocal on these songs, and we talked about it in rehearsals and stuff, but it was Jeremy that kind of hooked it up and made it happen.
What do you do live? What happens? She
joined us here at the Horseshoe when we played recently, and it was awesome. We've just been getting by without her on the road. Mm. It would be cool to have that, but unfortunately we're not really, you know, in a financial place to have a fifth member or, you know, on the road.
Fair enough.
But anytime we play locally, it'd be sweet to have her get on stage.
Jeremy, can you expand upon this idea and also Dorothea being the person you actually brought into the mix?
Well, she's great, and I met her just through some mutual friends and then heard her sing, and I'd seen her play before, and she's also such a great hang, you know.
She's extremely funny.
Yeah, very smart, very funny.
Yeah.
When we got into the studio, I had to tell her to sing worse because she was like harmonizing with me and she was kicking my ass, and I had to be like, pretend that you're, you know, at a kitchen party in Cape Breton and you've just drank like six schooner and you're singing along to some song. You know, and she was laughing at that. She's not used to that.
Well, yeah, I can see that, actually. But, she's not a stranger to the Scrappy, is she?
I don't know.
I don't think so. I mean, I think she takes... Anyway, she's not here to speak to this, so I don't want to speculate. No. Brian, do you feel like you, as a guitarist, and in your contributions to the band, had to alter your mindset in any way, given all these new dynamics that are brought in? I'm thinking of... Songs like The Sound of Music, I believe it is the backbone is a really cool guitar part, but then and now that I'm talking to you, I feel like I'm misspeaking, and it might be a synth part. The driving instrument in that song near the beginning, is that you, Brian? Is that a guitar?
I think it's a keyboard.
The banana band.
That's a keyboard. That's a keyboard.
Oh, I played that on guitar too. It's all layered.
Yeah.
What we did basically is just like recorded way too much stuff and then just gave it to Dan and we're like, here, can you make a cool record out of this? And he decided what to keep and what to take. Or what to get rid of, I mean.
Back to my question, Brian. Did any of this new stuff and new approaches impact you and your role in this band and the things you thought you could bring to it?
No, I don't think so. I inherently ended up tracking more keyboards than guitar on this record than versus Cooler Returns, which was really fun. I had a lot of fun tracking Farfisa all over the record at Union because it's a beautiful Farfisa they have. Hmm. And I had a lot of fun just like I was saying earlier, where I would track like a guide keyboard part to help the guys get their drum and bass parts. And while I was doing that, Dan was manipulating it. So when we would go back and listen to it, I would hear cool little tails and little blips and bloops. And just, I had a lot of fun, you know, listening back to that and seeing what Dan was doing in real time to our live performances.
Well, I mean, it sounds great. And I will say that I think it's your best record, if I may.
Oh, wow.
Are you feeling that? Are you feeling that way?
I think it's... our most cohesive record.
I can see in Brian's eyes he's not buying what I'm selling. You don't think that?
No, I think. I mean, it's hard to. It's like the new. It's the new kid on the block, right? Yeah. Obviously, you're gonna like it more than the two albums that you've been. You know, that's been sitting around
gathering dust in the storage locker.
Yeah, we don't really care about them as much. So it's the new whatever, the new shiny toy. So inherently, you're gonna like it more. But I definitely am proud of it, and I can't wait for people to hear it.
Well, I mean, on the one hand, just bringing all the new people in and trying new things, it is inherently going to probably seem objectively to others like a more ambitious album because you've done things outside of your comfort zone or outside of your actual band dynamic, right? So that's where I think people are going to come to it as, like, if they read all the context, they're going to be like, oh, there's a lot going on this record for a Kiwi Junior record, and there's a lot more external forces involved. I think when you finish with something like that, you either are proud of your achievement or you're like, you know what, next time, back to square one. We go back to the way we used to do things. So that's where I'm kind of coming from. And I know it's probably too young in the process for you to have particular feelings on this, but overall, would you say this is an experience, Brian, that might inform the next Kiwi Junior record in some way?
Oof, that's, it's hard to think about the next record when this one hasn't even come out yet. But ideally, in my mind, yeah, we would keep evolving as a band and try new things and, you know, have collaborators and guest musicians and vocalists and stuff. You know, I'm definitely, you know, I if we were to go back in the studio, let's say next month, I wouldn't want to start making another football money. Hmm. You know, of course, you want to evolve and keep changing and try new things.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
With anything, really with anything. And yeah. You know.
No, I appreciate that. Jeremy, do you have thoughts on my line of questioning and Brian's refusal to try to predict the future?
Yeah, I haven't written any new songs yet, but we're getting older. It's hard to play those up-tempo songs live from the first record.
Are you joking, or is this the... Do I need to put a sad music bed under the rest of the podcast?
My ears can't handle the feedback.
I'm half joking.
I will say, like I alluded to the extricacies of the film, like, I think we all agreed that's a different kind of approach for this band, a softer approach. And that's the kind of thing where that little... And there's other things on the record, too, that strike me as distinctive. But that little thing can actually shift you. And I wonder if that's occurring to you already. Like, wow, that's a real departure for us. And it felt good. I'm really proud of it. Maybe this is something we can explore.
Yeah, we just haven't had that conversation yet. But that's probably, you know, my favorite song off of the new record.
Wow.
So if we did gonna kind of go into that direction, I wouldn't be disappointed. Hmm. But, you know, Downtown Area Blues is also one of my favorite songs on that record, and that's definitely the most upbeat kind of punk rock sound.
Potentially the funniest song. Every time it comes on, I think of you. I assume, please correct me if I'm wrong, Jeremy, but I assume this was something that you heard someone say or you guys joke about. It seems like an inside joke come to life as a song is all I'm getting at. Can you tell us just a little bit about Downtown? Just someone saying, oh, I'm from the downtown area. Sounds funny. And Ruby and like touristy or something. But where does it come from for you?
I don't know how that expression, downtown area, got into this song. But the song itself started just by the idea of being trapped in a storage locker overnight and having to wait it out. And then it was like, man, imagine if that storage locker was downtown. That would take you even longer to get home once you got out.
Well, your delivery of we're a downtown area band, I think you say we got some downtown area fans.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's a Beckner line.
Yeah, too. I was going to say, so when Jeremy was doing a vocal takes, it was originally just we've got downtown area fans. And I went over to Dan and suggested, and then Dan to Jeremy to add the we've got some.
Yeah.
And it just, for me, adds, like, it makes it so much funnier.
It's incredibly funny.
Instead of having fans, we've got some fans, which makes it seem way less.
No, but you've got some.
You've got
some downtown area fans. Like, some.
Yeah. Yeah, not
there's
a lot,
some. There's some just about that. So, Dan, all praise to Dan. That's a really funny, and to you, Brian. That's very funny. And all this to say, it's a very entertaining record. It's provocative. I hope, despite the previous appearance, you know I love you guys very much. And I kid you, you're like my kid brothers, I think. My white kid brothers, if I may. There's a line for a song right there. Now, not to give you any ideas. If people want to learn more about the Kiwi Junior band, Jeremy, where would you like to send them?
Just to the internet.
On the internet. No, sorry. I know there's the internet. That's what I was referring to.
Google.com.
You could have said a record store.
Google Chrome.
No, please. Don't.
Firefox.
Don't pick the browsers. My point is this. Can you give us specific places to go? Is it your website? Is it your labels? What is it? Is it your Instagram? This is what I'm after. Specific information. Can you help us here, Jeremy?
Yeah, well, we probably update the Instagram more frequently than we do the website. But the website's probably a pretty good place, kiwijunior.com.
Okay. Our newsletter is pretty good. Send them out every few weeks whenever we've got any kind of news to share.
I don't mean to put any pressure on you, but will there be any mention of this appearance potentially in your newsletter?
100%.
Oh, that's sweet. That's very lovely. Do you guys write your own newsletter? Because I just did one the other day, and it took a lot out of me. I do one a month for the show because I was trying to do a weekly. I'm like, no one wants to hear this. Why am I doing this? So I go once a month. No one's complained. Do you guys come up with all your content for your newsletter?
I think it's mostly just links to videos,
and stuff like
tour
this.
Announcements.
You just said it was really good. Were you lying?
Well, it gives you all the info you need to know. If you want to hear about shows, new singles, new podcasts.
No opining or jokes or fun things. Like, it's just...
Not yet. Huh. I'm trying to put all that stuff in the songs.
Yeah, that's true.
Can't be saving stuff for the newsletter.
You could do a thing if you had done it. Your album, as we're speaking, is going to be out in just a couple of days. Or as people are hearing this, I should say. It's going to be out in a couple of days. But it would have been maybe fun, or maybe not, to talk about each and every song once a week until the record came out. You could do that, and then people would be like, oh, that sounds interesting. It's like a behind the music for Kiwi Junior. What do you think about that, Jeremy? Maybe next time?
Yeah, and we'll launch it on the Creative Control podcast network.
That's right. I don't know why you think this is a network. It's just one show, but that's fine. It's people speak how they speak. What's sort of coming up next for Kiwi Junior as we're speaking? You got a record coming out. We've talked about that. Brian, is there actually tour plans and other stuff coming up?
Yeah, next thing is we're going to Europe in September we got like 10 or 11 shows. And then, not quite sure.
Have you done Europe before?
We did the UK once, January 2020. So right before things all kind of went awry. But we had a blast. We were there pretty short, probably a week run. We played 5 or 6 shows, and we loved it. Shows were great. The fan just got along with everyone. And so, yeah, we're excited to get back over. But this time we're going into mainland Europe as well as
amazing. Congratulations. That's great. That'll be fun, I think. Jeremy, you are an observational writer. I know this about you. If I were to hang out with you for too long, I'd be nervous that anything I said or did would end up in one of your dumb songs, which are brilliant, by the way. They're brilliant dumb songs, if I might say. You haven't started writing anything. Is that what you really meant? Like, you haven't? Nothing?
Well, I got this one idea in F sharp.
No, I didn't mean music. I just mean, do you walk around and you're on the subway and someone says something and you type it onto your phone or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you got
sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you got a little notepad full of
Yeah, I got a lot of ideas in my phone.
A lot of Hillroy's.
No.
Cahiers.
Yeah, I got some of these right here. I forget what they're called.
Duotangs, binders.
See, I got the little booklets and I write things down sometimes.
Little field notes.
Yeah, field notes. I just was going to say, when you're in Europe, keep your eyes and ears open. There's going to be some fodder there, I'll tell you. I just think.
Yeah, I bet.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. I sound like a travel agent. If we can go out on a song from this new record, I wonder if we can pick one. Because there's two of you, I want to give the choice to one of you and the veto power to the other. So, Jeremy, if you can pick a song for us to go out on, which would you pick and why?
I'll pick the song Clerical Sleep. I just really like what Doro brings in this song with her singing on it. And we discussed that prosthetic limb lyric a bunch. So you can hear what the hell we were talking about.
Throughout the record, there's a recurring, almost robotic voice. Is that Dorothea?
Oh, I think you're probably... Yeah, she does kind of like a Siri voice. Is
there
that
has to be another man. Like, I can picture...
Yeah,
I can,
yeah,
in
yeah,
my
yeah.
head, I don't have notes, of course, because I'm an idiot. I just remember thinking that this voice would occur Yeah, like a Hal or a Siri kind of voice. That's correct. Yeah.
I don't even know if I don't know what Siri sounds like. I'm just assuming she has a voice, but yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And that's Doro. She did that on a few songs.
Is there a reason it's on a few songs? Like, is it a narrative device of some kind?
Well, you know what's interesting is she didn't know the songs. I was just like, say this into the mic, and she would just say it. We would capture it and then place it. Like, she didn't know what the song was or what it was about.
Oh, okay. It was pretty organic.
Yeah, I just had the idea to try it a few different ways, and it made it into a couple songs.
Hey, Siri.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me more about the band Kiwi Jr.?
Okay. I found this on the web for Can You Tell Me More About the Band Kiwi Jr.?
Wait.
Who's your Siri?
I'm good for now, Siri. Thanks.
That sounds like he had a southern accent.
Yeah, he sounded cool as hell.
Yeah.
It's American man Siri. You can change your Siri. So you got to get that guy on your album next. I'm getting at there. Just
that would've been
sorry,
cool.
We have a thing. Sorry, we have an arrangement where I have to find him work constantly on the show. So that's why I just
this
wanted
is your
to
big
show off.
Apple kickback, is it?
That's not exactly the case. Okay, we're going out on Clerical Sleep. Is that what we agreed to about 5 minutes ago?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, Brian, do you agree or do you veto?
No veto. No veto, Vish.
Okay. No veto, Vish. That's a whole other thing. All right. This is Clerical Sleep by the wonderful Toronto downtown area band Kiwi Jr., whom I adore very much. Please pick up their new record. Gentlemen, Brian, Jeremy, thank you so much for making any time for the idiot that is me and coming back on the show. We'll see you for album 4. Best of luck in the future.
Thanks, Vish.
Thanks, Vish. Anytime.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Oh, very special thanks again to Jeremy and Brian, and no thanks at all to Broen and Mike from Kiwi Junior for appearing and respectively not appearing on this, the 708th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. Everything you need to know about me and those things is there. You can like Creative Control on Facebook or follow the show on Twitter at @vishcreative. Or you can follow me directly on Twitter and on Instagram at @vishkana. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain this podcast. That's the primary form of income that I get for doing this work on top of some of the other work I do. $6 or more a month grants you access to exclusive content that is only available to Patreon subscribers, including a significant amount of overtime with Jeremy and Brian from Kiwi Junior. We talked about their current obsessions, and it was quite interesting. And that is the OT for this week. And if you do $6 or more a month at the Patreon, you can have access to that and everything that's been posted up to this point as exclusives for Patreon people. And some of it, again, derived from episodes like the one you just heard. Some of it is from my archive of audio interviews that I've done over the years preceding this podcast. I hope it feels like a decent amount of extra stuff. Either way, you're supporting this show. And again, $6 or more gets you the access to that. You can donate less than that a month, and you can donate much more than that a month. And whatever you donate, you can change at any point. Cancel it, reduce it, increase it. It's great. Now, also, I think it's great. That's a great option, right? How flexible could you? That's pretty flexible. If you want a Creative Control t-shirt, I don't have that many left in a way. I got to go through all the sizes. I know I'm out of the red medium now, or maroon medium. But if you want one, message me on Patreon, and I'll get you one while supplies last. Thanks again to the fine Alberta record store, Blackbird Music, with locations in Calgary and Edmonton, Alberta, which you can learn more about at blackbird.ca. Also, thanks to Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to my dear friend Jim Guthrie, whom you can learn more about, and his music. You can learn more about him and his music at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Kiwi Junior. We've had some great times together on this show. Go back into the catalog and find those other episodes if you haven't heard them. Please consider subscribing to the podcast or following it and telling your friends to do the same and spread the word about Creative Control. Thank you so much. I hope you're well, and I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.